Welcome to Establish the Edge. I'm your host, Mike Leone, here with Adam Rausch. We're bringing you the GPP Game Scores podcast. This will be, you know, the weekly show that we do for Establish the Edge. Sorry we didn't have it last week. I was traveling, but should have it most of the weeks from here on out. Adam did the graph that he usually does, looking at the game stack plot. So we're looking at the top eight players that kind of go into the game scores based on their projected value, what their actual average scoring on DraftKings was compared to their average ownership. And we see a game with like middle of the pack ownership that really blew things out of the water, DK scoring wise. It was Tampa Bay at Houston. And Adam actually went to that game. So he's going to have to tell us which game he's going to this week so we can all stack that up.
Oh, yeah, I got to book my flights because fortunately Texans on the road. We will talk about that game because that Cincy-Houston game is going to be we got a lot of variables there with injuries. But, yeah, I mean, Texans-Bucks, I mean, I wouldn't say it was a huge surprise. I mean, this was our top-rated game on FanDuel last week on our table. It was a little bit lower on DraftKings, but it had – you know, relatively good value compared to a lot of other games. And it was very affordable to build, even though the ceiling may have been a little repressed, it was still kind of a viable game. I had a little bit of exposure to it and was there. So, you know, that's, you know, you get double the fun there, but you know, it had everything that we were looking for. It had elite ceiling as far as outcome. It had low ownership across the board. It came in lower owned than I think we thought it was going to. And then it was, you know, it was affordable. So yeah, the Stroud triples hit big time with Tank Dell, with Noah Brown, with Dalton Schultz. Five of the seven players, or five of the top seven fantasy performances came from this game last week. Crazy. I mean, it was just, it was insane. It saved the week, honestly, for GPPs, because the rest of the graph looks pretty gross and like something that we wouldn't want. So thank goodness that we had CJ Stroud save our slate for us.
Yeah. And we've got a dynamic now with offense down across the league where one game like this going off can really be the entire slate. You mentioned five of the top seven scores. We did, as you said, kind of overproject the ownership in this game a little bit. So that was a little bit of a miss for us, although we're still rated really well in the game scores table for FanDuel. Also think, you know, that we possibly could have leaned into the Houston pass rate a little bit more with Damian Pierce out. So that's something I was thinking about. But it's interesting that in our post-lock sims, the Stroud stacks, because the ownership rated as the best stacks in our post-lock sims when we looked at some tournaments, despite the fact that, you know, maybe we didn't project it as highly as we thought. So like even based on those, the projections that we had, the fantasy point projections we had. So thought that was interesting. You can see where, like, you know, games like Stroud had are pretty rare, where you're throwing for over 400 yards, you're throwing for over four plus passing touchdowns. Yeah. He had five. If that happens, you can triple. I think, though, even like a game where a quarterback goes for 350 and three, sometimes there's room for a triple on DraftKings with the different ways guys can score, especially if the tight end's involved, like Dalton Schultz, where he had like a middle of the pack price. And overall, there was no receiver that had like, you know, I think everybody on DraftKings was below 6K. You know, Nico, I think, was like in the high fives, was the most expensive. So when the salaries are lower, you can stack more because what's required out of each player is a little bit less, as opposed to like, you know, you're stacking, you know, Jamar Chase and T. Higgins. You can do that, but like, you if you tack on a third there, it starts to be hard because Jamar Chase needs so much at his salary to pay off. Just as an example, I had a fairly good week not playing this game. I only made one lineup. I was traveling, so I wasn't as in touch. I played the Deshaun Watson double stack with Amari Cooper and David Njoku. Did not force the bring back. So luckily kind of had the three right players. As you can see, that game overall was not good, but you know, there's some instances where if you think the efficiency of an offense is going to be good, you don't necessarily have to force that bring back. That's been the case for me the last couple of weeks. I just wanted to note that. But let's dive into this week, Adam. And we've got the game scores table up and Houston up at the top again at Cincinnati. But as you noted, a lot of variables here. T. Higgins looks like he's going to be out. Nico Collins and Jamar Chase are on the injury report. They could possibly not play. So there's definitely things that we, you know, that are going to affect the final score of this table and the final fantasy point projections that go into it.
I think even with the uncertainty, especially on Cincinnati's side, I think CJ Stroud stacks are still going to be pretty viable. I mean, if Nico Collins is indeed ruled out, which we're not sure of yet, but his injury report doesn't look great. I mean, that's what hit last week in Houston was the CJ Stroud stack without Nico Collins. You know, you're not going to have Nico did catch a touchdown, but you're still going to have an environment where CJ's pass rate still may be up. If Damian Pierce doesn't go again, we might be running into a similar scenario where Bob Slowick may want to lean on the pass game more. That may lead to a higher ownership projection for Tank Dell and Dalton Schultz. So we may not get them at ownership discounts that we got last week. But yeah, I mean, so look, the total is at 47. That's pretty good for this slate, but a lot of this could change depending on what we hear today. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's always a weird dynamic too with the injury stuff where it's like, if guys are out, guys become better values, but then they become higher owned. And also the game becomes a little bit more fragile. So like, it's a bunch of moving pieces where some parts that go into the game scores are going to look better. But some aspects are going to look worse. Like the raw ceiling is going to be worse, but the value is going to be way better. The ownership is going to be a little bit higher. You know, the total salary is going to be better. So I imagine it'll stay one of our top two or three games almost no matter what, because we're projecting so many pass attempts from both teams, you know, possibly scale that back on the wide receiver injuries. But even still, with Damian Pierce out again, and the way Cincinnati's playing, you know, these teams should be two of the higher pass rate over expected teams.
Here's a question for you, Mike. So let's say worst case scenario for Cincinnati's offense, Chase and Higgins are both ruled out. Are you still comfortable mixing in Joe Mixon in a game stack at his ownership, which will likely skyrocket?
Yeah, I mean, Mixon's been so inefficient. Like, I think his projection's right, and like, I think he's a solid value, but if he really skyrocketed, you know, I don't know how interested I would be. And in some ways too, the running back suffers as much as anyone when those pass catchers are out. You know, you can substitute more inefficient carries, less high value touches. I'd still be interested, honestly, in some Burrow like triples, because you're going to have like three really cheap guys. Like talking about the Houston stuff, how you could triple it. Like if you can have Boyd, Irwin, and a tight end. The frustrating part was they rotated, like the tight ends on the showdown slate were absurd, where like three tight ends got there for them between Irv Smith, Tanner Hudson, and Drew Sample last week was out of control. But yeah, I think there'd be some like Cincy onslaught stuff where you're taking on a little bit of risk that the offense stinks with two amazing receivers out. But if it does hit, you know, the value return is going to be so massive.
Agree with you on that. I'm looking at some of these names on this. I mean, you want to play Andre Eocevis?
he's caught a couple touchdowns. You never know.
We might have to bump up his ceiling.
Yeah, it'll definitely get weird there if Chase is out. Like, we're gonna have to adjust the play calling and whatnot. I tend to think he's gonna play, but like, be a little limited. It's really hard projection on him because, like, I think he's banged up. You know, I don't think he's 100%. But right. T. Higgins is out, so like, you got to balance those factors. So it's tough. But yeah, that game, you know, it's going to be appealing one way or the other, but kind of like TBD on exactly how to attack it based on the injury stuff. Yeah. Hopefully we have more info on that by the time Established Emily Rose rolls around tomorrow morning. The second game, Adam, on our game scores is Washington at Seattle. This is in Thorman's snaps and pace article. It's his top game that he highlighted. And this game seems really exciting. Like, it's not sneaking by anybody in terms of the excitement, but the pass rate over expectation for Washington has been absurd. And because they're not that good, like it's like if the Chiefs weren't that good, you know, the Chiefs throw so much and they're good. Imagine if they had negative game scripts, how much they would throw. Like, that's Washington right now. and their defense is, you know, they traded a couple of defensive players. Their pass defense already horrific, particularly in terms of giving up big plays. So you can really attack this game in a variety of ways. Geno stacks, Howell stacks with, you know, bring backs could be Walker or the receivers. Definitely seems like a juicy game.
It does. I'm excited about it as well. I think in general, QB plays like Geno or like Sam Howell, guys in this mid tier, I think people are going to be looking at them more. I mean, we're going to talk about Purdy. We're going to talk about Lawrence here in a minute too. I think in general, people are not going to want to pay up as much, maybe outside of that Cincy Houston game, depending on how the injuries play out. So yeah, I don't think this game's going to sneak up on anybody. But it is appealing given the large contextual game environment with the poor defenses, Seattle coming back home looking at a bounce back spot here. The only downsides that I could see, maybe, you know, you want to write a negative narrative towards this game, is the total is pretty low, maybe relative to the other games at the top of the table at 44.5. And the other thing that I think we hope that doesn't happen is we kind of get this flat target distribution from both of these teams, which is something that we've kind of had to deal with, especially on Washington's side, where Sam Howell is dropping back so many times per game. His pass rate is super, super high, but it doesn't seem like it's very concentrated. We're getting really even distributions to Dotson and McLaurin and Logan Thomas and even Curtis Samuel when he mixes in there. So, and then you also got to deal with the running backs too. So that's what we're kind of hoping against, is that everyone gets these kind of low target floors. We're hoping that kind of concentrates more, and we can kind of pinpoint some guys who can get some ceilings out of this game.
Yeah, the negative part, like you said, it's going to be hard to pinpoint who to take. On the positive spin side of that is it does keep any individual player's value down across the industry, which keeps the ownership maybe in check. I do think this game's going to get steamed a little bit from where we have it. Like right now we have all the Seattle individual skill players like sub 10%, like high single digits. I think it's coming up just because it's such an obvious game, but it'll be interesting to see what wins out, like the game being obvious or the individual values not being as obvious as far as what people decide to do here. Let's keep it going and look at San Francisco at Jacksonville. This is the game I like quite a bit. And, you know, when I was doing the predictions this week, did notice that San Francisco's defense has been a little bit overrated, at least by my own perception. I know by FTN's DVOA, I think they're more like just like middle of the pack, as opposed to, you know, I kind of think of them as just like a dominating team overall. That hasn't been the case. Their offense is hyper efficient, which always gives us really big ceiling plays on their side of the ball to play. And them being efficient, I think, should spur Jacksonville to throw more frequently, which, you know, that's what we want. They haven't thrown as aggressively, as consistently as we kind of hope for coming into the year. But if they do, you know, you've got, you know, Evan Ingram looks quite chalky, but, you know, could be a spot to get Christian Kirk, Calvin Ridley at like appropriate ownership levels.
Yeah, we're getting, you know, everyone is on the table here for both of these teams, which is nice. We're getting San Francisco back with Debo this week. And then, you know, both these teams, you know, like you said, efficient offenses. This is our highest average ceiling projection as of right now. So, and I will say that our inputs kind of have the salary score for this game. It's basically saying it's the second most expensive game to stack. And I think the CMC price is kind of inflating that. So I wanted to give some context to that, because I think outside of CMC's price, like I think you can build this game like several different ways.
It's also a super good note to you, Adam, because I remember this late a few weeks ago when I ended up playing KC Chargers and it didn't rate that well in game scores. You know, part of it was because it was expensive, but like it wasn't hard to fit on the slate. And that's something that's hard to get our game scores to like understand. And as we're seeing like these lower totals, grosser slates overall, sometimes there aren't a lot of expensive players to play, which means the game scores using that high salary as a negative might not necessarily in practice be as detrimental.
Our current game score on this is 0.6. I think if you kind of take into context of what we just talked about with the salary, the score should probably even be higher in your mind, right? Like that's kind of what we're saying. And it's helpful that we can kind of look at these individual inputs and provide some context, because if you're just looking at the table itself, you might look at that number and be like, well, I may, they're not as high on it as maybe Houston, Cincinnati, or Washington, Seattle. So maybe I'll fade it a little bit more. I think it's always good to kind of look at the projections yourself too when looking at the table and say, okay, why may that score be a little bit lower than I anticipated? Well, because the relative salary, the average salary relative to the rest of the slate is a little bit inflated by that CMC salary.
Yeah, and looking at specific plays, Kittle's a bit pricey on DraftKings, but looks like a pretty, he's in that spot on FanDuel where he's an okay value, but still not that owned. I think Brandon Ayuk's really interesting. If people are like, Debo's back, he's overpriced now, and they're not playing him, this dude can go for 150 and two with how he's been able to get down the field and how good he's been. So really like Ayuk here. Next game we have, Adam, is the Chargers-Detroit game, which is actually the highest total on the slate at 48.5. Part of the concern here, we mentioned the salary stuff affecting San Francisco. It affects the Chargers too, with Keenan and Eckler being pretty pricey, Amon-Ra pretty pricey, and you don't get any relief at quarterback. Like in San Francisco, Jacksonville, you at least get some relief with Purdy at quarterback. You don't get that, at least on the Chargers side, with Herbert up at 7,700 and Goff kind of in the mid-tier. Both the running backs on Detroit are kind of pricey. So it's a little bit tougher for me to get on this game. I don't know if the efficiency upside is quite as good as it is in San Francisco, Jacksonville. So I am a little bit more worried about the salary costs in this game than I am in San Francisco, Jacksonville. Maybe that's hypocritical though.
No, I was going to agree with you 100% there. Looking at this game, the salary for this game is what actually concerns me, because like you said, we had some relief at quarterback in that Jags Niners game, but we really don't have any outs here. Everyone at every position is expensive. Anyone you would want to play, and I'm talking position, relative to position, even Sam Laporte is 5,700. You're not getting any kind of break. At running back, Montgomery and Gibbs are the same exact salary on DraftKings, I don't have faith that we're going to get as high of a throw rate in this game as I think we would want, because of how these teams have operated in the past. We've seen the Chargers kind of lean in heavy to using Eckler and Josh Kelly in these kind of neutral or positive game scripts. But even then, their offense hasn't really hit the last couple of weeks like it had previously in the year. So to go up and pay 7,700 for Herbert and then pay over 8K for Keenan Allen, it's just going to be really tough to, one, to fit it comfortably, and two, to have any kind of faith in that this stack will reach a ceiling performance. I definitely don't want to say it's a complete fade by any means, because that total is where it's at for a reason. But you may have to kind of scale back your stack tier. And if you're going to pick an expensive mini correlation or a mini stack, you got to hope that you hit it big time, that, you got to hope you 4X it. And then at these salaries, that's going to be a little bit of an ask.
Yeah. And, Detroit, even on the back end of their wide receiver grouping, is possible Donovan Peoples-Jones plays, and Jameson Williams has been playing a little bit more. So now, some of the cheaper plays like Josh Reynolds, Khalif Raymond, you can't really justify now. You could maybe take a leap of faith on Jameson Williams with his big playability, but you're sacrificing a ton of projected value if you're going to take that leap of faith.
Right. And the only other cheap guy I could think of would be Quentin Johnston. And his underlying metrics, who would want to play him? He's been one of the worst rookie receivers in the league this year. So, yeah, I'm kind of with you there.
I kind of think that's the guy you'd need to take a chance on if you play the game.
No.
Is he's been so bad, but he's going to run routes and he's like I'm not saying I'm into it or that you should do it, but if I wanted to stack this game, he would be a good dirt plant candidate, but I'm not as into the game. So we'll avoid it. We'll save the real dirt plants for later, but
that's a dirt plant. That's a dirt plant right there.
Let's go to Arizona, Atlanta, another game that Thorman has in his snaps and pace article. Detroit LAC was up there too, but Atlanta, Arizona, you know, I think Thorman notes that this game has a bit more volatility in terms of the pace than usual. We don't know how Arizona's going to play with Kyler. You know, they're kind of more neutral this year than we expected. Obviously that's a drop off from when Kyler was playing and they were like really fast because that was with Cliff, but maybe they play a little bit faster with Kyler. I think the hope on the Arizona side of things is Kyler's, you know, the quarterback play has been pretty bad. Like, I like Josh Dobbs, but like Kyler is clearly an upgrade there. And if that has a big impact on Marquise Brown, Trey McBride, that helps. An issue though, like as I'm looking at it, the projected ownership, at least right now on those two guys in particular, is quite high.
Yeah.
The market's building in that Kyler bump and it makes things difficult, you know, as far as stacking the Arizona side of things.
Right, exactly. That was what I was going to say is, you know, we have an opportunity now where we can start playing Kyler, but at these projected ownerships for Marquise Brown and Trey McBride, I don't know if that's a risk I'm willing to take in a game that already, you know, you could make a lot of negative arguments about, even if the pace is up. What I think you may have to hope for in order for this game to hit is you get Atlanta in a high throw rate game, which just hasn't happened. And I don't know if it ever will happen. So, you know, you're getting kind of discounted ownership on the Atlanta side with Heinicke and Drake London, who I think is going to be back and at the tight ends as well. But yeah, leaning into a game stack with two guys above 20%, one guy projected above 30% at tight end. I don't know. I'd probably be looking elsewhere. Although I'm just generally glad to have Kyler back because I think in future weeks, Cardinal stacks are going to be a little more viable.
The Kyler double with Bijan coming back is just. It's too much. Things you can do, you know, we're watching Michael Wilson. I think he's going to be back this week. Him and Rondale Moore are very cheap on DraftKings. Not sure what the ceiling is there, but like mixing in one of those guys and then playing the Heinicke side of things, not playing Bijan and getting into one of the cheaper tight ends with Drake London would be the route that I think, you know, could generate some upside, enough leverage on the field.
Yeah.
So those are our top projected scoring games. Look at some other games that might be interesting.
You want to talk about this Titans Bucks game? Cause
yeah, Titans Bucks. So, yeah. I think the interest here would be that these are two teams that historically the way you attack the defenses is through the air, not on the ground. That's been the case, I believe, against Tampa Bay this year. It hasn't been the case as much against Tennessee, but if you look at the discrepancy in DVOA for Tennessee's defense, they definitely have a worse pass defense and then like a good enough run defense. So, and we know Tampa Bay can't run the ball. So if you encourage both teams to throw a lot, even though the total's low, you could see how it gets there. You have some uncertainty too on Levis. Like, we don't know how good he is, but we know he's going to sling it down the field. Like, that's going to be like a high variance game environment. So it's interesting there. It's funny how Rashad White's gone from this guy that like no one really wants to play, and now people are pretty comfortable playing him. So that's one difficulty, is like the pass catchers look a little overpriced on Tampa Bay, but White has a lot of ownership. That's, you know, on DraftKings at least, that's what I'm struggling with. But I like the Levis to Okonkwo and Hopkins stuff.
You know, and it's funny, like when I was looking at the projections for this game too, that was where my mind immediately went, was like maybe you can mix in some Tennessee stacks. And we're not have we don't have great values on these Tampa receivers, but Baker Mayfield is like one of the top DraftKings values at quarterback this week. And I know I think there's going to be some recency bias too into playing the Tampa side, because we saw them hit last week in a big way. Now they're back at home. But I mean, I look, if you're looking kind of for an off the board game that has some ceiling potential, I think this one would definitely be a game to look at. I like the Hopkins play. You mentioned Okonkwo too. That play intrigues me a little bit as well. So yeah, for a sneaky game, like a game that may be a little bit off the radar.
Yeah, the values, I think I lost Adam here for a second, but the values on the Tampa Bay pass catchers are better on FanDuel. Just wanted to note that. I think we get Mike Evans with a top 10 ceiling projection over there. We'll double check those. Seem a little bit light to me even still. So I'll double check those. But yeah, in some ways, like the Levis double with the Rashad White, even if he's somewhat chalky, bring back is similar to the Houston Tampa Bay setup last week. And you know, I'm tempted.
All I was going to say, sorry, I don't know if you caught this or not. I was going to say, if this game were like on the previous two or three slates, I think I'd be way, like, I think I'd be really heavily invested in it. On this kind of a slate where we have a few more appealing game environments, I think the ownership's going to, I think the interest in the game and the ownership is going to stay pretty low.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, we've keep noting how the offense and stuff is down, but the totals on this slate, particularly from those top four or five games, are a little bit better than what we've had to deal with recently. So, but yeah, I do like it for large field tournaments. I don't think I would be able to stomach it in small field. Let's get to dirt plants, Adam.
Okay, well, we just talked about it, so I was gonna go with Will Levis. I think the popular play, or like the value play, is Baker, obviously, but I kind of like Will Levis as like a lower price QB option in a game that doesn't look very appealing on the surface. Like you said, he's really gonna sling it. You know, maybe we even get some rushing out of him. And I think even if you want to pair him with Hopkins or Okonkwo, I think that works well in a large field tournament this week. So I'll go with Will Levis as a dirt plant this week.
All right. I'm gonna stick that, you know, we're gonna tag team this dirt plant here, and I'm gonna go with Okonkwo, who definitely fits, you know, the definition of a dirt plant, seeing as how he has yet to crack double digit PPR points this season. So by that criteria, Adam, he qualifies.
Yeah, he qualifies. His
But
role has expanded, though. I mean, that we've got some positive signs on him, at least.
yeah, and he had a, you know, some opportunity, especially that first game when Levis did well. Like, I think he dropped like a quite a long touchdown. And now we're looking at a situation where Burks is probably out with the concussion that he suffered last week. And yeah, I'm definitely interested in Okonkwo this week. All right, that's going to do it for us on this edition of the GPP Game Scores podcast. As always, thanks for joining me, Adam. You can follow him at A Rauch, RAUCH 1 on X. You can follow me at
X.
Two Hats, One Mic. Make sure you check out Established a Million Saturday morning with myself and Drew Dinkmeyer on Established to Run, as we go over, you know, everything GPP associated with this week. Best of luck, everybody. We'll be right back.